The emergency klaxons still echoed in my skull 10 days after they'd gone silent. That haunting wail had been the last organized response before Hive Varnax died. I remembered staring at the Manufactorum ceiling as it trembled, dust raining down on the cogitator banks where I'd spent 15 years of my life inputting production quotas. The plasma reactor in Sector 17 hadn't just failed, it had ruptured catastrophically, sending a radioactive firestorm through the mid-hive that melted flesh from bone and turned adamantium supports into twisted, weeping metal. My name is Davrek Lorne. I was nobody important, just a factotum assigned to Administratum Sub-Branch 4421, tracking promethium distribution for the hive's industrial sectors. Now I was perhaps one of the only survivors of 8 million souls, trudging through the ash wastes with my dying wife. The day of the meltdown, I'd abandoned my post when the first tremors hit, ignoring the monotonous Vox announcements urging workers to remain at their stations. Something in the pitch of the reactor technicians' voices told me this wasn't a standard emergency. I'd run a few levels and sectors to reach our HAB unit, shoving past panicking crowds and stepping over those who'd already fallen. By the time I reached our residential block, the outer walls had partially collapsed, and the air tasted like metal and burning promethium. I found Alara beneath a fallen support beam that had crushed our modest living quarters. The beam had missed her vital organs but shattered her right leg and hip. Her face, once considered beautiful even by the harsh standards of mid-hive society, was now a landscape of radiation burns and lacerations from shrapnel. One eye was sealed shut, weeping a yellowish fluid that I later recognized as the first sign of severe rad poisoning. But she was alive, whispering the prayer of deliverance when I pulled the debris from her broken body. The God Emperor tests us all. I had never considered myself particularly devout, but in that moment, I found myself muttering fragments of prayers I'd heard the chapel preachers recite during mandatory services. I tore strips from my factotum uniform to bind her wounds, knowing even then that it was futile. The rad counters throughout the HAB block were screaming warnings, their machine spirits driven mad by levels far beyond their design thresholds. We couldn't stay. Reports flooded the emergency Vox channels of secondary explosions, structural failures cascading through the hive's central spire, and worst of all, the cooling systems for the remaining reactors failing. Hive Varnax was dying by inches, and soon the rad storms would make survival impossible. I fashioned a crude stretcher from our HAB unit door and what remained of our bedding. Alara's breathing came in shallow gasps as I dragged her through corridors filled with smoke and the moans of the dying. The elevator shafts had become chimneys for toxic fumes rising from the underhive, so we took the emergency stairwells, descending level by level toward the hive's outer skin. The first corpses we encountered wearing official uniforms were a squad of Adeptus Arbites who had established a choke point at a major junction between residential sectors. They lay sprawled around their barricade, their carapace armor blackened and melted in patches. Their weapons remained clutched in gauntleted hands, unfired. Whatever had killed them, radiation, toxic gas, or some catastrophic pressure wave, had done so without giving them time to defend themselves. I took a shock maul from one of the bodies, the first time I'd ever touched a weapon more lethal than a maintenance cutter. By the time we reached the mid-hive commercial district, the true scope of the disaster became clear. The Grand Market Plaza, usually teeming with thousands of traders and customers, had become a charnel house. Bodies lay where they had fallen, some still clutching worthless possessions or reaching toward exits that had been sealed by automated emergency protocols. The rad counter I'd taken from a dead emergency responder clicked with increasing urgency. We had perhaps hours before the radiation levels would become instantly lethal. Alara slipped in and out of consciousness as I pulled her through the devastation. Her skin had taken on a grayish hue, and blisters formed wherever the rad burns were most severe. I paused only to scavenge supplies, med kits from emergency stations, water from broken pipes still flowing with relatively clean liquid, and ration packs from abandoned vendor stalls. Most had been picked clean already by the first wave of survivors. The God Emperor protects, but he expects his servants to fight for their survival. This thought sustained me as we descended further toward the outer hive walls and the ash wastes beyond. The lower we went, the more desperate the survivors became. Twice I had to hide as gangs of former hivers, already showing signs of radiation sickness and moral degradation, hunted through the ruins for supplies and victims. I clutched the shock maul tighter, knowing I would use it if they discovered us. We found the bodies of Planetary Defense Force troopers at a breach in the outer wall. Unlike the RBTs, they had died fighting, their las guns emptied at some unknown threat. The wall behind them had been blown outward, creating a jagged opening to the wasteland beyond. Whether they had been trying to prevent people from leaving or defending against something trying to enter, I couldn't tell. Their equipment was gone, stripped by survivors who had passed before us, but the breach offered our best chance of escape. I knew that Hive Omnium lay approximately 200 miles to the northeast. Under normal circumstances, only the foolhardy would attempt to cross the ash wastes without a properly equipped caravan. The toxic dust, predatory fauna, and lack of water made the journey perilous even in the best times. But with Varnax dying behind us, there was no choice. Omnium was our only hope. Night was falling as I carried Alara through the breach, her weight seeming to increase with every step despite her wasting frame. The sky above was unlike anything I'd seen in my lifetime of hive dwelling, a vast, dark expanse dotted with cold points of light. Stars, I realized, visible only because the thick smog that normally surrounded Varnax had been temporarily cleared by the massive thermal updrafts from the reactor meltdown. The ash crunched beneath my boots as we moved away from the hive's shadow. I glanced back once at the massive structure that had been my entire world. Varnax had always been an ugly hive, a brutal monument to humanity's determination to survive on even the most hostile worlds. Now, with flames still visible through breaches in its armored skin and dark smoke pouring from its upper levels, it resembled nothing so much as a dying leviathan, some massive beast in its death throes. The rad counter continued its ominous clicking as we put distance between ourselves and the hive. I oriented myself using the distant lights of orbital platforms still visible through the clearing atmosphere, setting a course that I hoped would lead us to Omnium. The first night in the wastes nearly killed us both. The temperature dropped to near freezing, and the thermal blanket I'd scavenged barely preserved our body heat. Alara's breathing grew more labored, and I found myself counting the seconds between each exhale, terrified that each might be her last. By dawn, I knew we were being followed. The ash wastes weren't as deserted as they appeared. Scavengers, human and otherwise, had emerged from hidden warrens to investigate the hive's catastrophe. I glimpsed movement on the horizon, figures silhouetted against the rising sun, keeping pace but maintaining distance. They were assessing us, determining if we carried anything worth killing for, or if our flesh itself might provide sustenance in this barren landscape. The second day brought the first rad storm, a howling gale carrying radioactive particles from the ruined hive. I covered Alara's face with a filtration mask taken from a dead tech priest and wrapped my own face in strips of cloth, but the exposure left us both vomiting and weakened. Her wounds, which I had cleaned as best I could with our limited medical supplies, began to suppurate with infection. The antibiotics in the medkit were insufficient for injuries of this magnitude, especially combined with radiation poisoning. By the fifth day, I was carrying her entirely. The makeshift stretcher had broken, and Alara could no longer even attempt to stand. I fashioned a sling from our remaining blankets and carried her across my back, her feverish body burning against mine despite the wasteland's chill. Her lucid moments became rare, but when conscious, she would stroke my face with radiation-blackened fingers, her one good eye fixed on mine with a love that made my burden lighter. The God Emperor's mercy sometimes comes in unexpected forms. On the seventh day, we stumbled upon the wreckage of a supply hauler that had crashed in the wastes months or perhaps years earlier. The vehicle had been picked clean of anything useful, but beneath a panel that had warped and sealed shut in the crash, I discovered a cache of emergency rations and a half-full water purifier. It was enough to extend our supplies for perhaps another week. The scavengers continued to shadow us, their numbers growing as word spread of survivors from the hive. I saw them most clearly at dusk and dawn, ragged figures in patchwork environmental suits, some riding on mutated beasts that sniffed the air for weakness. They were waiting for us to falter, to collapse from exhaustion or radiation sickness. I slept in short bursts, the shock maul always in hand, starting awake at the slightest sound. By the tenth day, Alara could no longer swallow water without choking. Her remaining eye had clouded over, and the radiation burns had spread to cover most of her body. The med counter I'd taken from the supply hauler confirmed what I already knew. Her radiation exposure was far beyond survivable levels. Each step I took caused her pain, yet she never complained. When conscious, she would pat my arm weakly, as if to comfort me. That morning, I counted our remaining supplies as Alara slept fitfully in the meager shade of a rock formation. One ration pack remained, containing enough nutrients to sustain a single person for perhaps 2 days. Our water would last no longer. The purifier had failed the previous evening, its machine spirit finally succumbing to the corrosive dust of the wastes. I stared at the horizon where heat distortion made the landscape waver and shift. Omnium should be visible by now if my navigation had been accurate. Instead, there was only more wasteland, stretching endlessly in all directions. Behind us, the scavengers had grown bold, closing the distance during the night. I could make out details now, the crude weapons they carried, the hunger in their posture as they watched us from less than a mile away. The single ration pack felt heavy in my hands as I looked down at Alara's wasted form. Her breathing had become a series of painful gasps, each one seeming to require more effort than the last. The infection had spread from her wounds into her bloodstream. Her remaining exposed skin was traced with dark lines like a roadmap of suffering. She would not survive another day of travel, let alone however long it might take to reach Omnium, if it was even in the direction I believed. I knelt beside her, the shock maul in one hand and the ration pack in the other, as the wasteland wind carried the sound of the approaching scavengers. The God Emperor asks for sacrifice from all his servants, but as I looked at my wife's face, contorted with pain even in unconsciousness, I wondered what sacrifice he was truly demanding of me in this moment. The decision crystallized in my mind like a blade of ice. I placed the ration pack in my pocket and tightened my grip on the shock maul, my heart heavier than it had been even when I first pulled Alara from the ruins of our home. The scavengers were closing in. There was no more time. I lowered the shock maul, my decision unmade for the moment as Alara's labored breathing continued its ragged rhythm. Dawn broke across the ash wastes, revealing the true horror of our surroundings in merciless detail. What had been shrouded in night's mercy now stood exposed beneath a radiation-tainted sun. The wasteland between Hive Varnax and Omnium stretched before us like the corpse of a world the Emperor had abandoned. Vast plains of gray-black ash shifted with toxic winds, forming dunes that appeared and disappeared within hours. The horizon wavered not just from heat, but from airborne toxins, the accumulated waste of 10,000 years of industrial runoff, chemical warfare residue, and radiation that had transformed this once habitable plain into a monument to human indifference. To our east, a half-buried Promethium pipeline had ruptured decades ago, creating a lake of rainbow-sheened chemicals that still bubbled with noxious gases. Skeletal remains of cargo 8 haulers and civilian transports littered the landscape, their metal hides corroded into lace patterns by the caustic atmosphere. Some had been picked clean by scavengers, others remained untouched, too contaminated even for the desperate to approach. The distant silhouette of an abandoned Mechanicus monitoring station rose from the wasteland like the spine of some buried leviathan. Its transmission tower listed at a precarious angle, long dead auger arrays still pointed at the poisoned sky. Scattered between us and the structure were the twisted remains of Manufactorum outposts, prefabricated buildings that had once housed workers maintaining the vital supply lines between hives. Their walls had been peeled back by rad storms, interiors gutted by scavengers or collapsed from structural failure. I adjusted Alara's position, trying to make her more comfortable against my back. Her skin burned with fever despite the morning chill. The radiation burns had progressed beyond anything my limited medical knowledge could address. Where I had cleaned and bandaged wounds days earlier, the flesh now showed the mottled purple-black discoloration of rad gangrene. The makeshift dressings I'd fashioned from scavenged cloth were soaked through with yellowish discharge that carried the unmistakable sweet rot smell of infection. My own body fared little better. Radiation sickness had settled into my bones with a deep ache that no amount of rest would cure. My gums bled when I drank our rationed water, and clumps of hair came away in my hands whenever I wiped sweat from my brow. The dosimeter I'd salvaged from the emergency responder had stopped functioning on day 8, its machine spirit overwhelmed by the accumulated rads or simply drained of power. I didn't need its mechanical confirmation to know we were both dying by inches. Alara's breathing pattern changed as I trudged forward, becoming more shallow and rapid. I stopped to check her condition, laying her gently on a relatively flat patch of ground. Her remaining eye opened briefly, unfocused and yellowed with jaundice. Her lips moved in what might have been an attempt to speak, but no sound emerged from her radiation-scorched throat. I applied the last of our Medi-Kay salve to her cracked lips and used precious drops of water to moisten her mouth. The wound on her hip had begun to smell of decay despite my attempts at cleaning it with our dwindling antiseptic supplies. I consulted our crude map, markings I'd scratched onto a piece of salvaged plasteel with a burnt stick, using the stars and distant orbital platforms for navigation. According to my calculations, we had covered perhaps 70 miles in 10 days. Omnium should be visible on the horizon if my navigation was accurate, yet there was no sign of its massive silhouette against the sky. Either my navigation had failed, or the wasteland was far vaster than the official Administratum maps had indicated. Neither possibility offered comfort. As midday approached, I spotted movement on a ridge to our west, not the scavengers who had been tracking us, but new figures. Three survivors, judging by their gait, human rather than mutant or abhuman. They approached with caution, keeping distance until they could assess whether we posed a threat. Their environmental suits were patchwork affairs, assembled from various sources, PDF flak armor, industrial hazard gear, and what appeared to be the remnants of void suit components. All three carried weapons, a las gun, a hydraulic mining tool converted to a club, and an auto pistol. I remained motionless, one hand on the shock maul but making no threatening moves. After several tense minutes, they approached close enough to communicate through hand signals. They were refugees like us, though they had escaped Varnax earlier, perhaps from the outer habitation rings that had received advance warning of the reactor failure. They had been traveling for 15 days and had seen no sign of Omnium. The oldest of the three, a man with radiation burns across half his face, examined Alara's condition with grim expertise. His assessment, conveyed through terse gestures and expressions, confirmed what I already knew. The rad gangrene had progressed too far. Without proper Medi-Kay facilities, antibiotics, and rad purging treatments, she would not survive another day of travel. More disturbing was their warning about what lay ahead. They had encountered other survivor groups, most of which had been attacked by scavenger gangs operating in the wastes. These weren't merely opportunistic predators, but organized bands, former underhivers, radiation-twisted mutants, and even what one of them described as possible heretical cult members awakened by the disaster. The scavengers were well equipped, having stripped military-grade weapons from PDF outposts and emergency response caches. They hunted survivors not just for supplies, but for flesh. The radiation and toxic exposure had driven some to cannibalism. The refugees offered to share what little they had, a few sips of filtered water and information about the safest route forward. They pointed toward the distant Mechanicus monitoring station, suggesting it might offer temporary shelter and possibly functioning equipment. Then they continued on their way, heading southwest toward what they believed was an Imperial Guard outpost that might still be operational. I watched them disappear into the haze of toxic dust, three more souls cast adrift in the wasteland. Their brief presence had been the first human contact in days that didn't carry the threat of violence. It left me feeling both less and more alone, reminded that others struggled as we did, yet also that each group faced this hell in isolation, with resources too scarce to allow for true cooperation. By late afternoon, Alara's condition had deteriorated further. Her breathing became so labored that each inhalation sounded like tearing fabric. The infection had spread visibly, dark lines tracking up from her hip wound toward her torso. Her skin had taken on a grayish pallor except where radiation burns created patches of angry red or the black purple of necrotizing tissue. I administered the last of our painkillers, a single tablet of some unidentified medication from the emergency kit, crushed and mixed with water to ease it past her cracked lips. The Mechanicus monitoring station grew larger as we approached, its true scale becoming apparent. What had appeared as a modest structure from a distance revealed itself as a substantial installation, partially buried by shifting ash dunes. The Imperial Aquila above its entrance had been half eroded by caustic winds, giving the sacred symbol an appearance of melting into the ferrocrete. The main access door hung partially open, its locking mechanism long since failed. I carried Alara inside as the light began to fade. The interior was a tomb of abandoned technology, cogitator banks covered in dust, auger screens cracked and dark, and the skeletal remains of what might have been a tech priest still seated at a monitoring station, mechadendrites fused to control interfaces in death. The air inside was stale but less toxic than outside, filtered through systems that had continued functioning at minimal capacity long after the station's abandonment. In what had once been a data analysis chamber, I found a relatively clean surface to lay Alara down. Her breathing had become so faint that several times I pressed my ear to her chest, terrified that she had slipped away while I searched the station. Each time I detected the weak flutter of her heart, but it was clear that her body was shutting down system by system. The station yielded unexpected treasures during my desperate search, a cache of emergency supplies overlooked by previous scavengers, perhaps due to being hidden behind a panel that required knowledge of Mechanicus unlock runes to open. Inside were water purification tablets, a single dose of broad-spectrum antibiotics, and nutrient paste packets marked with the cogwheel of Mars. I immediately administered the antibiotics to Alara, though I suspected they had come too late to reverse the infection's progress. Most valuable of all my discoveries was a functioning Auspex unit, a portable scanner used by Mechanicus expeditions to map terrain and detect energy signatures. Its power cell retained perhaps 10% charge, enough for limited use. I activated it with trembling hands, hoping it might provide some indication of our position relative to Hive Omnium. The device hummed to life, its screen flickering with green-tinted data. As it calibrated to our location, a topographical map appeared, showing the surrounding wasteland in surprising detail. According to its readings, we had veered significantly off course during our journey. Hive Omnium lay not to the northeast as I had believed, but almost directly east, and if the Auspex was accurate, it was far closer than I had estimated. Perhaps 30 miles, a distance that could be covered in 2 days of hard travel by a healthy individual. This revelation hit me with the force of a sledgehammer. We had been so close all along. If we had maintained the correct heading from the beginning, we might have reached Omnium days ago when Alara's condition was still treatable before the rad gangrene had set in. The knowledge was a cruel mercy. Salvation was within reach, yet still impossibly distant for Alara in her current state. I returned to her side with water purified using the tablets. Her lips barely parted to accept the liquid, most of which ran down her chin despite my careful administration. The antibiotics showed no immediate effect. The infection was too advanced, too entwined with radiation damage to respond to such basic treatment. She needed a proper Medicaid facility with radiation purging equipment, surgical capabilities, and specialized pharmaceuticals, all of which existed in Hive Omnium, now tantalizingly revealed to be just beyond the horizon. Night fell, bringing with it the bone-deep cold of the wasteland. I powered down the Auspex to conserve its remaining charge and huddled beside Alara, sharing what little body heat I could generate. Through a broken section of the station's ceiling, I could see stars, cold, distant points of light in the void, uncaring witnesses to our suffering. Somewhere among them, I knew the Emperor watched from his golden throne. I had never been particularly devout, but in that moment I found myself silently reciting fragments of prayers learned during mandatory chapel services, begging for guidance. As midnight passed, I heard the distant sounds of the scavengers who had been tracking us. They had followed our trail to the monitoring station and now circled it, assessing points of entry. Their voices carried on the night air, guttural, distorted by mutation or the crude vox amplifiers of salvaged rebreathers. I clutched the shock maul tighter, knowing that in my weakened state I could not hope to defeat multiple attackers. The single ration pack remained in my pocket, its weight a constant reminder of our dwindling options. The Auspex had shown that Omnium was achievable, but not for both of us. Alara could not travel 30 more miles, she might not survive the night, and carrying her slowed my pace to a crawl, ensuring that neither of us would reach salvation. I looked down at her face, illuminated by the faint green glow of emergency lighting that still functioned in the station's core systems. Her features were barely recognizable now. Radiation and infection had transformed her into something that looked more corpse than human. Only the shallow rise and fall of her chest indicated that life still clung to her ravaged form. The sounds of the scavengers grew closer. They had found an entry point on the station's eastern side and were forcing their way inside. I had perhaps minutes before they discovered us. The shock mall hummed with energy as I activated it, its power cell still holding a charge sufficient for one or two impacts. The ration pack seemed to grow heavier in my pocket as the terrible calculus of survival crystallized in my mind. I looked toward the east, where Hive Omnium waited beyond the horizon. 30 miles, 2 days of hard travel for a healthy man, perhaps 3 in my condition. The single ration might sustain me just long enough to reach it. Alone, my hand tightened on the shock maul as I turned back to Alara, the weight of an impossible decision pressing down upon me like the entire mass of a dying hive. The rusted hull of the Arvis lighter creaked around us as the wasteland winds battered its exposed skeleton. We discovered it half buried in ash during the early hours of our 10th day, its imperial aquila barely visible beneath layers of corrosion and toxic dust. The pilot's remains still occupied the cockpit, desiccated hands fused to control sticks by time and radiation. Whatever mission had brought this craft to crash in the wastes between hives had been forgotten long ago. I settled Alara in the relative shelter of the cargo compartment, arranging her wasted form on a bed of tattered insulation material I'd stripped from the walls. Her skin had taken on the mottled appearance characteristic of advanced radiation poisoning, patches of deathly white interspersed with angry red blisters and the purple-black necrosis spreading from her infected wounds. Her once vibrant copper hair had fallen out in clumps, leaving raw patches of scalp exposed to the caustic air. She hadn't spoken in over 24 hours. Consciousness came to her in brief, confused moments. Sometimes her remaining eye would open, clouded and yellowed, searching the space around her without recognition. Her lips would move silently, perhaps forming prayers or calling out to me, I couldn't tell. When lucid, she would reach for my hand with fingers blackened by radiation burns, her grip so weak I could barely feel her touch. The Auspex unit I'd salvaged from the Mechanicus monitoring station lay beside me, its screen dark to conserve the last dregs of power in its ancient cell. I didn't need to activate it again to remember what it had shown. Hive Omnium lay 30 miles east of our position, close enough to reach in 2 or 3 days of hard travel, close enough to save one of us. I removed the nutrient paste ration from my pocket and placed it on a section of exposed metal flooring. The small silver packet contained barely 200 calories of synthetic proteins and carbohydrates, formulated by the Adeptus Munitorum to sustain an Imperial Guardsman for 1 day of combat operations. It was the last of our supplies. Everything else, the water, the medicine, the emergency stims, had been consumed or used on Alara's wounds. My stomach contracted painfully at the sight of the ration. I hadn't eaten in 36 hours, having given Alara the previous packet despite knowing she could barely swallow. Most of it had dribbled from her cracked lips, wasted on her radiation-ravaged throat. The rational part of my mind, the part shaped by a lifetime of imperial indoctrination about efficiency and resource allocation, had recognized the futility even then. But I couldn't bear to eat while she went without. Now there was only one packet left, and no more room for sentiment. I crawled to the shattered viewport of the lighter and peered out at the wasteland. The perpetual haze of toxic dust limited visibility, but I could make out movement on a ridge approximately half a mile away. The scavengers had tracked us to the crash site. They moved with the patience of experienced predators, content to wait until exhaustion or desperation forced us to leave our shelter. I counted at least 7 distinct figures, some hunched and possibly mutated, others standing tall in the patchwork environmental gear of professional wasteland scavengers. One rode atop what appeared to be a rad mutated canid, its hairless body twice the size of a normal hound, skin covered in suppurating sores that leaked yellowish fluid. The beast's muzzle had split into 3 separate jaw structures, each lined with blackened fangs. Even at this distance, I could see the unnatural intelligence in its 6 eyes as it scanned our position. I retreated from the viewport and returned to Alara's side. Her breathing had grown more labored over the past hour, each inhalation a painful rasp that shook her entire frame. The infection had spread visibly since we'd taken shelter, dark lines tracking upward from the shattered hip toward her heart. The antibiotics from the monitoring station had proven useless against whatever microbes thrived in her radiation-weakened flesh. She was dying, not in the abstract sense that we were all dying in this wasteland. She was actively slipping away, hour by hour. The Medicaid officers in Omnium might have saved her 5 days ago, perhaps even three. But now, even if I somehow carried her 30 miles across toxic terrain while evading the scavengers, she would be dead long before we reached the hive gates. I ran a hand through my thinning hair, coming away with another clump of radiation loosened strands. My own body was failing too. The constant exposure had left me with bleeding gums and vision that occasionally doubled or blurred. The persistent metallic taste in my mouth was another symptom of rad sickness, along with the bruises that appeared on my skin without injury. But unlike Alara, I could still walk, I could still fight, I might still reach Omnium if I went alone. The thought had been growing in my mind for days, pushed aside each time it surfaced, but returning with greater insistence as Alara's condition deteriorated. Now, with the scavengers closing in and our supplies reduced to a single ration, it could no longer be ignored. I closed my eyes and tried to pray, seeking guidance from the God Emperor who had overseen humanity's suffering for 10,000 years. The words wouldn't come. Instead, fragments of imperial doctrine floated through my mind, teachings from mandatory chapel services and propaganda broadcasts that had formed the background noise of life in Hive Varnax. The strong survive to serve the Imperium. The weak perish so the strong may continue. Sacrifice is the duty of all who live beneath the Emperor's gaze. These platitudes had always seemed distant and abstract, meant for soldiers and missionaries on far-off worlds. Now they pressed against me with physical weight, transforming from vague ideology into brutal pragmatism. If I stayed with Alara, we would both die, either from exposure and starvation or at the hands of the scavengers. If I left her and traveled alone, I might reach Omnium. I might survive to serve the Imperium for decades more. The Emperor demanded sacrifice, but whose? I opened my eyes and looked down at the auto pistol I'd taken from one of the dead PDF troopers days earlier. It contained a single round. I'd checked its magazine repeatedly during our journey, saving that final mercy in case we encountered something worse than death in the wasteland. Now the weapon's purpose clarified with terrible certainty. Outside, the scavengers had begun moving closer, emboldened by the approaching darkness. I could hear the mutant canid's three-part howl echoing across the ash plains. They would attack during the night, when my already compromised vision would fail me completely. I lifted Alara's head gently, cradling her against my chest. Her skin burned with fever despite the wasteland's chill. The infection had reached her neck, visible as dark lines beneath her translucent skin. Her breathing came in irregular gasps, her body fighting a battle it could not win. When her eye fluttered open, there was no recognition in its clouded depths, only pain and confusion. The Emperor's mercy. That's what the Ministorum preachers called it, the act of ending suffering when recovery was impossible. They applied it to worlds beyond redemption, to populations corrupted beyond salvation. But in this moment it meant something far more intimate and terrible. I reached for the auto pistol with a trembling hand, its weight suddenly immense. The metal was cold against my palm as I checked the chamber one final time. One round, one mercy. I placed the barrel against Alara's temple, the metal pressing into skin so fragile it seemed it might tear from contact alone. Her eye closed, whether in acceptance or simply from exhaustion, I couldn't tell. Her breathing continued its ragged pattern, each inhale a battle, each exhale potentially her last. My finger rested on the trigger, unable to complete the motion. 15 years of marriage collapsed into this single moment of unbearable choice. I remembered our first meeting in the Mid-Hive Commerce Sector, her laugh when I fumbled my identification papers, the small ceremonies of our shared life, meals prepared from meager rations, prayers murmured in unison before sleep, dreams whispered in darkness about someday seeing the upper hive. The scavengers were moving again, their silhouettes visible through gaps in the lighter's hull. The mutant canid's howl came closer, followed by the distinctive sound of salvaged civilian vehicles, the growl of Prometheum engines modified to run on toxic wasteland fuel. They had grown tired of waiting. I looked down at Alara one last time. Her face, despite the ravages of radiation and infection, still held echoes of the woman I had loved. The woman I had promised to protect when we exchanged vows beneath the watchful eyes of a Ministorum priest. The woman I was about to abandon. The trigger moved beneath my finger. The report was deafening in the confined space of the lighter, a single crack that echoed off metal walls before fading into silence. Alara's body jolted once, then went still. The ragged breathing that had filled our shelter for days simply stopped. I sat motionless for several minutes, still holding her cooling body, my ears ringing from the gunshot. The scavengers had gone quiet, perhaps startled by the sound, perhaps recalculating their approach now that they knew their prey was armed. Eventually, I laid Alara's body down on the makeshift bed. I closed her eye with fingers that felt numb and distant, as if belonging to someone else. I should have felt something: grief, guilt, despair. Instead, there was only a hollow emptiness, a void where emotion should exist. I took the nutrient paste ration and tore it open with my teeth. The contents were a grayish-brown sludge with the consistency of engine oil and the taste of synthetic proteins and preservatives. I forced myself to eat slowly, to savor each calorie that might keep me alive for the journey ahead. As I ate, I recited fragments of the litany of survival, not as prayer, but as justification. The strong endure to serve the Emperor, the weak perish that the strong may continue. My survival honors her sacrifice. The words rang hollow, even in my mind. When I had consumed every molecule of the ration, I gathered what little equipment remained useful: the shock maul, the now empty auto pistol, the Auspex unit with its failing power cell. I took nothing of Alara's. Her wedding band, a simple band of hab block scrap metal, remained on her blackened finger. Some irrational part of me believed she would need it, wherever souls go when the Emperor calls them home. The scavengers were moving again, closing in on the lighter from multiple directions. I could hear the mutant canid sniffing at the hull breaches, its three-part breathing echoing through the metal skeleton. They would be inside within minutes. I found a rupture in the cargo bay floor, barely wide enough for a man to squeeze through. It led to a maintenance crawl space and eventually to an emergency exit that had been concealed by shifting ash. As I lowered myself into the opening, I glanced back at Alara's body, a pale shape in the growing darkness. I should have said something, a farewell, a prayer, an apology, but words seemed meaningless in the face of what I'd done. Instead, I simply turned away and dropped into the darkness below, leaving behind the woman I had loved and the man I had been. The wasteland night enveloped me as I emerged from beneath the lighter, its absolute darkness broken only by distant stars and the eerie bioluminescence of radiation-mutated fungi that grew in patches across the ash plains. I oriented myself using the Auspex unit, powering it up just long enough to confirm my heading before darkness reclaimed the screen. East, 30 miles, Omnium. I began to run, pushing my radiation-weakened body beyond what should have been possible. Behind me, I heard the scavengers breach the lighter, their excited calls echoing across the wasteland as they discovered what I had left behind. The mutant canid's howl rose above the others, triumphant, hungry, already on my trail. I ran through the night, my mind fracturing under the weight of what I had done. With each step away from the lighter, the justifications grew louder in my head. The strong survive, the weak perish. Sacrifice serves the Emperor. I had done what was necessary. I had done what anyone would do. I had done what Alara would have wanted. I ran until my legs gave out, until blood filled my mouth from ruptured vessels in my radiation-sickened gums, until the wasteland blurred around me. I ran toward salvation and away from the man I had become in that rusted lighter. I ran, and behind me, the scavengers followed, hunting not just my flesh, but the last fragments of my humanity. I stumbled forward through the ash wastes, each step more uncertain than the last. The horizon wavered before my eyes, distorted by radiation sickness and exhaustion that had settled into my bones. 10 days of exposure had taken their toll. My skin hung loose on my frame, marked with radiation burns and the telltale bruising of internal bleeding. Blood from my deteriorating gums filled my mouth with a metallic taste that no amount of spitting could clear. The shock maul dragged behind me, its weight suddenly unbearable. I'd been clutching it since leaving the Arvis lighter where Alara's body lay cooling, her suffering finally ended by my hand. The memory of the auto pistol's report still echoed in my skull, drowning out even the constant clicking of my failing rad counter. My mind drifted in and out of lucidity. In the clearer moments, I checked the Auspex unit, confirming my heading toward Hive Omnium. During the darker periods, I saw Alara walking beside me, her body whole again, her copper hair gleaming in sunlight that hadn't touched these wastelands in centuries. These hallucinations became more frequent as the hours passed, my radiation-addled brain conjuring comfort from nothing. The scavengers had fallen behind sometime during the night. Perhaps they'd been satisfied with claiming Alara's remains and the meager possessions we'd left behind. Perhaps they'd simply decided I wasn't worth the effort, already marked for death by radiation poisoning. Either way, their absence provided no comfort. I was alone in a wasteland that had been killing me by inches since we fled Varnax. Day broke across the ash plains, revealing a landscape transformed by overnight wind patterns. Dunes had shifted, exposing the skeletal remains of ancient structures, hab blocks, and industrial complexes that had once stood outside the hive walls, abandoned during some forgotten catastrophe. The toxic dust that hung perpetually in the air took on an amber hue in the morning light, almost beautiful if not for the burning sensation it caused in my lungs with each labored breath. I activated the AuSpex unit one final time, its power cell flickering on the edge of failure. The screen glowed faintly, displaying topographical data overlaid with distance markers. According to its readings, Hive Omnium lay less than 5 miles ahead. 5 miles. I could have laughed if my parched throat had allowed it. 5 miles from where I'd left Alara, the knowledge hit me with physical force, driving me to my knees in the ash. If I'd maintained the correct heading from the beginning, if I'd pushed harder, if I'd trusted the AuSpex data sooner, we could have reached Omnium together. Alara might have survived. The mercy I'd granted her had been unnecessary, premature. I'd killed my wife when salvation lay just beyond the horizon. I remained kneeling in the ash for what felt like hours, the weight of this revelation crushing me more thoroughly than any physical burden. The ration I'd consumed, the one I'd taken for myself rather than sharing her final moments, churned in my stomach. I retched, bringing up bile and blood that stained the gray ash black. Eventually, I forced myself to stand. Whether from stubbornness or the deeply ingrained imperial doctrine that suffering must have purpose, I continued eastward. If I survived to reach Omnium, perhaps my testimony about Varnax would save others. Perhaps my suffering would serve the Emperor in some small way. Perhaps there was still meaning to be found in the wasteland. The terrain changed as I approached Hive Omnium, the flat ash plains giving way to more varied topography. Industrial waste had been piled into artificial hills over millennia, later covered by ash and dust until they resembled natural formations. Scattered across these mounds were the remnants of defensive positions, bunkers and weapons emplacements from some forgotten conflict, their ferrocrete walls worn smooth by caustic winds. I passed the remains of a refugee convoy that had never reached the hive, civilian vehicles arranged in a protective circle, their occupants long since reduced to sun-bleached bones. The pattern of debris suggested they'd been attacked, perhaps by the same scavengers who had tracked Alara and me. La's weapon scoring marked several vehicle hulls. The refugees had fought back but ultimately failed. I wondered if they too had made impossible choices in their final moments. The first true sign of Omnium appeared through the haze, massive void shield generators rising from the ash like the spines of some enormous beast. Their surfaces were scarred by centuries of exposure, but unlike the abandoned technology I'd encountered throughout the wasteland, these machines hummed with power. The void shields themselves were invisible except where ash particles contacted the energy field, creating brief flashes of blue-white light that outlined the hive's defensive perimeter. Beyond the generators, the outer wall of Hive Omnium rose into the toxic sky, a mountain of ferrocrete, plasteel, and ceramite that dwarfed even Varnax in scale and grandeur. Unlike my home hive with its utilitarian design, Omnium had been constructed with an eye toward intimidation and majesty. Gothic spires and buttresses adorned its lower levels, while gargoyle-like weapon emplacements protruded at strategic intervals. The Imperial Aquila dominated the main gate, carved from black stone and inlaid with precious metals that somehow maintained their luster despite the corrosive atmosphere. As I approached the void shield perimeter, movement caught my attention. Imperial Guard patrols traversed the wall ramparts, their silhouettes distinctive in carapace armor and helmets. Heavy weapons teams manned the larger emplacements, massive autocannons and heavy bolters positioned to repel any threat from the wasteland. Servitor units worked tirelessly, maintaining the exterior defenses with mechanical precision. More surprising was the activity beyond the walls. Temporary structures had been erected in the shadow of the hive, white pavilions bearing the symbol of the Officio Medicae. Vehicles moved between these field hospitals and the main gate, ferrying supplies and personnel. Most shocking of all were the refugees, hundreds of them organized into orderly lines, receiving treatment and processing from Medicae staff. The realization struck me with devastating clarity. Imperial relief efforts had been dispatched to address the Varnax disaster. The Officio Medicae had established triage stations to treat survivors. They had equipment, personnel, and medications, including, undoubtedly, treatments for radiation poisoning and infection. Treatments that could have saved Alara. My legs gave way beneath me as I collapsed within sight of salvation. The shock maul slipped from my nerveless fingers, clattering against stone as I fell to my knees once more. The enormity of my mistake, my sin, expanded to fill the wasteland around me. I had killed Alara to spare her suffering, to give myself a chance at survival, when help had been waiting just beyond the horizon. A patrol spotted me from the perimeter. Three guardsmen approached cautiously, lasguns raised, their features obscured by rebreather masks designed for wasteland operations. They surrounded me with practiced efficiency, one keeping his weapon trained on my position while the others checked for hidden threats. Finding none, they signaled to a Medicae team waiting near the shield perimeter. The Medicae personnel moved with urgent professionalism, their white environment suits marked with the red insignia of their office. They reached me within minutes, already assessing my condition through AuSpec scanners and diagnostic equipment far more sophisticated than anything I'd seen in Varnax. One administered an injection that dulled the pain almost immediately, while another placed an oxygen mask over my face, flooding my radiation-scarred lungs with clean air for the first time in days. I was lifted onto a stretcher and carried through a small portal in the void shield, the energy field parting momentarily to allow passage. The sudden absence of background radiation felt like a physical pressure lifted from my body. As we passed through the field hospital, I glimpsed dozens of survivors in various stages of treatment. Many displayed radiation burns and injuries far worse than Alara's had been. Medicae servitors moved between beds, administering treatments through mechadendrite appendages equipped with surgical tools and medication dispensers. Advanced medical technology surrounded us, radiation purging chambers, augmetic surgical suites, even what appeared to be a portable tissue regeneration unit bearing the mark of the Adeptus Mechanicus. The Imperium had deployed significant resources to address the Varnax disaster, resources that could have saved my wife if only I had maintained faith and continued carrying her those final miles. I was brought to a treatment station where a senior Medicae officer examined me. His face remained hidden behind his rebreather mask, but his eyes showed clinical detachment as he reviewed the readings from a diagnostic AuSpec. He administered additional injections, anti-radiation compounds, immune boosters, and nutrient supplements that burned through my veins like promethium. The treatment continued for hours as toxins were filtered from my bloodstream and radiation damage was assessed. Servitors cleaned my wounds with mechanical precision, applying medicaments that sealed radiation burns and reduced inflammation. A tech priest examined the AuSpec unit I'd carried from the Mechanicus monitoring station, his mechadendrites interfacing with its machine's spirit to extract data about my journey. By nightfall, I had been moved to a recovery pavilion alongside other survivors deemed stable enough for secondary treatment. My radiation levels had been reduced to manageable thresholds, and the most severe symptoms addressed with targeted therapies. I would live, though the long-term effects of exposure would likely manifest in cancerous growths and organ failure in the coming years. As I lay on the Medicae cot, staring at the white fabric of the pavilion ceiling, the magnitude of my failure pressed down upon me. I had abandoned Alara when salvation was within reach. I had convinced myself that mercy required her death when true mercy would have been to continue carrying her those final miles. The ration I had consumed alone could have sustained us both just long enough to reach help. The Emperor's judgment seemed clear in this moment of clarity. I had failed in my duty as a husband, as an Imperial citizen, as a human being. The fact that I would survive while Alara's body rotted in the wasteland or was consumed by scavengers felt like the cruelest punishment the God Emperor could devise, to live with the knowledge of what I had done and what could have been. Morning brought a different kind of visitor to my bedside. Where the Medicae personnel wore white and moved with clinical efficiency, this figure was clad in dark gray robes trimmed with crimson. A small silver insignia hung at his breast, a stylized eye that identified him as an acolyte of the Inquisition. His face was youthful but marked with old scars, his eyes cold and evaluating as he studied me. The acolyte carried a data slate containing information about my journey, the route I had taken from Varnax, the monitoring station I had visited, the scavengers I had encountered. He asked questions about the reactor failure, about the patterns of destruction, about anything unusual I might have witnessed in the days before the catastrophe. His interest seemed particularly focused on my decision-making process during the journey, the choices I had made, the justifications I had created. As our interview progressed, the acolyte's questions became more pointed, more disturbing. He inquired about dreams I might have experienced in the wasteland, about voices I might have heard, about unusual compulsions or thoughts that seemed foreign to my normal patterns. He showed me picked captures of strange symbols and asked if I had seen anything similar etched into the ruins or carried by the scavengers. The implication became clear through his careful questioning. The Varnax disaster had not been an accident. The reactor failure that had killed millions had been engineered, perhaps by sabotage, perhaps by darker means. The Inquisition suspected heretical involvement, possibly a cult that had infiltrated the Hive's infrastructure over decades. More disturbing was the acolyte's suggestion that the wasteland itself had been tainted by more than radiation and industrial toxins. The decisions made by survivors, particularly the abandonment of the injured and vulnerable, followed patterns the Inquisition had observed in other cases of subtle warp corruption. The justifications survivors created for leaving companions behind, for consuming the last rations, for administering the Emperor's mercy prematurely, all bore hallmarks of external influence. The acolyte studied my reaction carefully as he explained that several survivors had reported similar experiences to mine, hearing the voice of Imperial doctrine with unusual clarity in the wasteland, feeling compelled to abandon the weak with a certainty that seemed absolute in the moment but hollow in retrospect. The wasteland between Varnax and Omnium had become a testing ground where human bonds were systematically broken, where mercy was perverted into murder, where survival became a corrupting force rather than a virtue. As he departed, the acolyte left me with a final, terrible possibility, that my decision to end Alara's life had not been entirely my own, that in my moment of greatest weakness, something had whispered justifications that aligned too perfectly with my desperate desire to live. That the wasteland itself had been a crucible designed to transform survivors into unwitting vectors for something that fed on broken oaths and abandoned loyalties. I remained in the Medicaid pavilion for 3 more days as my body responded to treatment. The radiation damage had been halted, though not reversed. I would carry its marks for the remainder of my life, however long or short that might be. The Officio Medicaid staff informed me that I would be transferred into Hive Omnium once stable, assigned temporary housing and work duties appropriate to my skills and physical condition. On the final night before transfer, I stood at the edge of the Medicaid camp, looking out through the void shield at the wasteland beyond. Somewhere out there, Alara's remains lay in the rusted hull of an Arvis lighter, abandoned by the husband who had sworn to protect her. I had survived, but at a cost that no Imperial citizen should willingly pay. The acolyte's suggestions offered a kind of absolution, the possibility that external forces had influenced my decision, that I had been manipulated by powers beyond my understanding. It would be easy to embrace this explanation, to distribute the weight of guilt across unseen entities rather than bearing it alone. But as I watched the toxic dust swirl across the wasteland, I rejected this comfort. Whether influenced by warp corruption or simply by human weakness, the hand that held the auto pistol had been mine. The choice to consume the final ration alone had been mine. The decision to leave Alara behind had been mine. The Emperor's judgment awaited all mankind, but my judgment had already been rendered in the wasteland between hives. I had survived, but the man who entered Hive Omnium the next day would not be the same man who fled Varnax with his wife. That man had died in the wasteland as surely as Alara had. What remained was a hollow vessel filled with regret, a servitor of flesh and bone programmed with the knowledge of his own failure. As night fell across the ash wastes for the final time, I turned back toward the Medicaid pavilion, toward the future that awaited me in Omnium. Behind me, beyond the void shields, the wasteland continued its slow, poisonous breathing, patient and eternal, waiting for the next survivors who would face its terrible choices.